with Michigan State, they just said, let's do a multi-book deal where you do several books, basically, honoring UP literature. The thing that's great about that is UP literature, for sadly, has been ignored to a large extent in the state of Michigan, and with that, ignoring and ignorance is not paying homage to rural writers and working class writers and native writers, you know, and the indigenous writers that are from the area. So I'm really happy that these books are allowed to give further voice to those people. And this particular book, And Here, is looking at the last 100 years of provincial writing chronologically. So you get to see the growth, the changes, the way the literature morphs and for me, I find that fascinating, that when I'm reading through the book, to see those grand shifts that start occurring in the language and in the storytelling.
Do you have an example, especially in the storytelling, to sort of give us an idea what you're talking about?
Yeah, I have two. I divided the book where it goes, starts off 1917, and you know that's pretty easy to do because I wanted to do 100 years, so I bring this to 1917, which is actually a time of grand change that I'm not going to get into because it'll take too much time. But I will start focusing on the very first shift I have of the chapters divided by these sort of historical marks. And I have it where 1957, I believe, is when the Mackinac Bridge opens up, and that is a huge shift that you start happening because it just starts becoming too easy to get to the UP. Until that point, it was much more separated, and there was more of an effort to get there, I guess. And so the literature wasn't as extensive. Once the bridge opens up, then all of a sudden, and you'll see that there's sort of a thinness to the early pieces that are in it, but after the bridge opens up, you have basically an explosion of Upper Peninsula writing because so many people are going up there to visit. When they go up to visit, a lot of these writers from downstate, or maybe even other places in downstate, when they come here, the UP is incredible, like cinematographic. It's just a place that it's easily makes its way onto the page. And so you see after the bridge opens up, that's one of the shifts where you just get an explosion of just more literature starts happening. Then the second critical shift that I think happens in the book for me, and this is from me looking at, you know, thousands and thousands of pages of literature, is post 9/11. And my after 9/11, the piece that I include in the book is Tom Bissell's Death Defier, and it's really like a novella. And in the UP isn't abandoned, but what you do is you have somebody who has UP roots who, and all of a sudden, is overseas in the middle of war, and that's just a very different way of storytelling. Rather than having, say, for example, the downstate author traveling up to Paradise, Michigan, and then writing about that experience. Instead, you have someone from the UP who's indigenous to the UP, like, born and raised, like Tom Bissell, and then that character going over into the middle of war, and that is just a very different way of storytelling. And it's so distinct from the earlier stories that happened at that time. But I think post 9/11, you get a grand shift in the type of narratives that you have about the UP. It's a little bit more cynical, one of the words I'd use.
Did you find any themes or similarities that actually ran through fairly consistently from 1917 to today?
Yeah, absolutely. When you're talking about an Upper Peninsula book, you're talking about an environmental book. And when you're talking about the environment right now, with the middle of where we are politically, it just automatically comes up in piece after piece after piece after piece, that people are interested in how the land is, one, represented, but then two, how is it taken care of or not taken care of? And especially when you start talking about like true indigenous authors, when we're talking about like April Lindell's Grand River Six Nations, or Sally Bronk, who's Lac des Flambeaux, and I have Jim Northrup in there, who's old school Native American writer, who's just fantastic. He starts off in his piece talking about mentioning about coming along and seeing the Isle Royale when he's out on water. Those pieces are just very, very, very important, and not enough. I think almost have been only been able to come been hurt in terms of Standing Rock, which I think that that's dangerous because the Standing Rock's happening all over the United States, and we pretend like it's not, but it's like it's everywhere. And so to have those authors, I'm really hugely into trying to give people like Sally and April, and Gordon Henry is in the book, and he's one of the best writers in Michigan, period, easily. It's stunning to see him live. April Lindla as well, just stunning to see those two read. So if you're talking about the events that are coming up, people can go see them. They're just really riveting as far as readers. And I think part of the reason why is because what they write about is so incredibly now.
You mentioned the events that are coming up are relating to the book and here, 100 Years of Upper Peninsula Writing. They actually start on Wednesday, August 16th, with three events in, in Munising at the Public Library, then at the Falling Rock Cafe, and then in the evening at the Negaunee City Library. There are several events relating to the book into the fall, and many of, obviously, today's writers will be at those events. What can people expect at that kind of an event?
You know, it's kind of cool. I'm not talking about one that will have already happened by the time this airs. But like on August 9th, we have Thomas Lynch, Jonathan Johnson, and Cameron Whippeck are all appearing or will have appeared. And Thomas Lynch is an American Book Award, I believe, winner, and National Book Award finalist. Jonathan Johnson is... had his work read on NPR. He was in Best American Poetry Series. And Cameron Whitbeck is just one of the huge up-and-coming names for poetry in the UP. And the cool thing about it is these are free events, and you go to them, and you get to not only see Thomas Lynch, but you also get to see Jonathan Johnson and Cameron Whitbeck. And it's the same with a lot of these other events that are coming up. It's multiple authors. That's one of the things I love to do. Occasionally, I get an author who doesn't want to do that, who sort of wants to appear by themselves, but that's very rare. Usually, other authors are really excited to be able to read their work and have a Q&A with other writers. And I like doing that because I want UP writers to get to know each other. I want people who write about the UP and acknowledge the UP to get to know each other much, much better. When I first started doing these book series, I would ask authors and librarians to name, say, their top five favorite UP writers, and some of them would say, I can't name any, and that I hate it. And what I want is the exact opposite. I want to be able to say, who's your top five favorite UP writers, and then I want them to give me 10, 20. Yeah, there's so many talented people. They're just really honest, to my heart, honest, very talented people. Somebody like a Tom Bissell, April Lindla, Ander Monson, there's just so many who are just powerhouses, and I'm proud of that. I'm proud that I come from an area where, Bambawala Gazitikwe, in 1800, she's born, and as Robert Dale Parker says, the first Native American literary writer. So we're talking about the beginnings of Native American literary writing starts in Sault Ste. Marie, where she's born. People from the UP don't do that enough to realize that. You're talking about storytelling, you're talking about the greats, I would say, you could even branch out of the world, the greats out of the world. When we're talking about Tom Bissell, you got to think right now, Werner Herzog just shot a film based off of his short story, and James Franco's shooting, The Disaster Artist based off of his writings. He's somebody who's just hot and intriguing and that's what I've been saying now. They just write about these really unique, interesting topics that interest us right now. And so I just love being able to make people more aware of who these writers are. I think these anthologies, if anything, buy them, but then read them and continue to buy books from those people once you find the people that you love in the anthologies and you can read even more.
And at these readings, at these public events, will the book End Here, 100 Years of Upper Peninsula Writing, is that ready to go and it'll be available at the events?
Yeah, it came out August 1st, so I'm really hoping so. I think sometimes some kids will do maybe a pretty rural library where maybe they weren't able to get copies, but for the most part, yeah. Especially the bookstore events will definitely be having copies. I know we're looking at doing an event at Snowbound, and we've got a... then coming up, Falling Rock. And I know Falling Rock is actually going to be supplying books for the Musing Library event. So yeah, and then that adds into when you have, say, five authors all from the book, I highly recommend people to get a copy of the book and then have all five of them sign it. I think it makes it a bit of a collector's edition. I'd love to do that myself.
Oh, a pretty special memento of the occasion. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
All right. Ron Rickey, thank you so much for joining us and telling us all about and here 100 years of Upper Peninsula writing, 1917 to 2017.
Yeah, and thank you specifically to you because it's the media that creates the heroes of the Upper Peninsula. So for you to pay homage and do stories about these great writers is really important as well. So very much thank you, too, for doing that.